Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Flight for Entirety, the only Doctor Who commentary podcast whose key word is respect. Black cotton gloves will be worn at all times, and there will be no drinking, swearing, or smoking of herbal mixture in the presence of the commentary. Anyone who breaks these rules inadvertently or deliberately between now and the end of the episode will find themselves scrubbing out the preparation room for the next month with a toothbrush. Understood? I'm Nathan.
I'm James.
I'm Todd.
I'm Peter.
And I'm an acrylic Henry Hoover full of Evelyn Waugh's awful offerings for this.
Well, so here's the background. This is another of our commentary podcasts. In July 2017, just 2 years ago, we asked you to vote on four possible stories for this commentary.
As if it was yesterday.
Yes. Fresh.
So it was The Mark of the Rani, The Mysterious Planet, Terror of the Vervoids, and Revelation of the Daleks. And the winner, Richard's Choice, again, with 45% of the vote, was Revelation of the Daleks. So we've got our DVD ready to go. We're on the main menu with sort of play all selected. And we'll press the play button when you next hear me say the code word Spiel Snape. Okay, I'm going to lean over
so
and...
many safe words being given away.
It's for free, no extra charge. Wow. Imagine using the word Spiel Snape in a sort of intimate...
Is that a safe word?
James and I have never had to use our safe words, have we?
What, the same safe word?
All right.
Oh, we share a flex.
Okay, we're ready to go, and I'm going to press Spiel Snape, and we're off.
So I'm going to play a drinking game with the listeners this episode. I'd like to know what the revelation is. So every time you hear me say, that's a revelation or some variation, you need to take a drink.
Ah. See, I always just assumed that we had Genesis of the Daleks, which is the first book of the Bible, and then we had Resurrection, which happened somewhere in the middle, I think, from memory, and then we have Revelation. So we're just...
I'm very disappointed we've missed out on the Leviticans of the Daleks.
Leviticus of the Numbers of the Daleks.
Yes. Of the Daleks.
Yeah, First Corinthians of the Daleks. All right. So here is who's our director, Peter?
Graham Hopper.
Because I was going to say it's one of the best openings since Pat Troughton landed on a beach. It just has, doesn't that feel atmospheric? And doesn't it look cold?
That's a revelation.
Don't you
just
think?
Just warming you up.
Don't you think that he is desperate to recreate Caves of Androzani?
It is the same opening.
Yeah, yeah. So a photograph of a distant planet, then the two of them sort of wandering out and talking, but also just the complexity of the world. One of the things that we've said about Sayward is while he might not be great, he's kind of capable of recognizing things that are great. And so a mashup of Caves of Androzani, which is brilliant, and Evelyn Waugh's The Loved One, you know, also brilliant.
This doesn't feel like our standard take on Sayward, does it? When you think back to what we've thought in the past, I think both of those stories are great.
Yeah, well, I think... I remember saying that was the best of the of Sayward's scripts. I think this one easily is his best script.
Have we all watched our season 19 box? Have we unearthed our and opened our fresh
not,
blue
but
box?
I know it pretty well.
The Earthshock one does hold up quite well, doesn't it? I love the score.
Love a bit of Earthshock.
I love the direction, and I like the pace, and I like the writing.
I think if we had just done that once, I would be happier about it. But given that we'd then remake it every 6 months afterwards until Sayward decides to go away.
Could you not say that of Evelyn Waugh's Bright Young Things period?
Yeah, I guess so.
The mutant thing has just taken the nut roast role. Is that what it is?
Yes. So
and it's just exploded. You know, you don't have those. That's a revelation. They're deadly.
So the mutant is, of course, played by Sir Laurence Olivier.
It's actually played by someone called Ken Barker, who I've never heard of. He does a great job.
But wasn't there some talk?
Yes, J&T wanted Sir Laurence, who I think it had become known to him
would be interested in a role on the show and said, okay, we've got to have a character that's all on location. So I know what. We've got this character who comes out and rolls around in the snow with the doctor and goes, rah, rah, let's offer it to Sir Lawrence, which they did. And Sir Lawrence politely declined.
That's insane, because I would have thought it would have been much better to offer him the role of the father in the glass Dalek. You know, that to me would be much more... logical.
Oh, anything involving heavy makeup would have been brought out from the start. But I mean, it's just such an outlandish idea. I've got a great role for you, Sir Lawrence.
Can you drool? Yes. Tell me, Larry, darling, can you drool?
That's a revelation.
It's famous miserable bastard.
Here he is. Our very own Clive Swift, a.k.a. Richard.
I didn't know you were in Doctor Who, Richard.
This is
a glamorous Cilla Black Bob for this story. I wonder where that will lead us.
This opening scene is marvellous, the way it sets up the world, pulling right back from the sarcophagus up the top, introduces all the characters.
And we have Colin Spall as well, don't we? As,
yes.
Is he Lilt?
Lilt, yes.
And he will be. He was in our Sideman two-parter in Series 2. So one of Graham Harper's old school friends, I think we decided. Didn't Brendan say that? It was like Graham Harper, only an actor.
Ha.
I think this is one of the few 80s stories that looks like it's had a tone meeting.
Yeah.
Everything's on board.
Do you think there's been a crisis of consciousness for this one?
I think it's just Graham Harper.
Todd and Peter, do you think they've looked at it and said, this season has been... because they were getting responses, weren't they, already, that the media had been... It hadn't been negative for the season, had it? Not overall, but it...
Yeah.
It had quietened.
So we've already had the announcement that it won't be back next year. That happens during the Two Doctors. So we already know that. But everything's in the can.
Everything's in the can, point. Yeah.
And, you know, the more I think about season 22, like, I don't like it very much, but it does seem to be trying to do something a bit different. And I think it's something that's a little bit ill-advised. But here there's a sort of fantasy world thing so that the grossness of it isn't – I mean, it's our third story with cannibalism in it for the season.
She's collecting things. That's a revelation. I've never seen her do that before. First time ever. Yes. Sorry to interrupt you.
She's decided to be a botanist.
Yes.
What did you say?
Well, I give Eric Saywood credit for this. He hasn't forgotten the roots of the character.
Oh, please.
But he gets it right, doesn't he? He gets the relationship between the Doctor and Perry right, and it's probably the only time this season.
It is. It's better, isn't it?
It is. It's played with humour. So they're kind of sniping at each other like an old married couple, but in the end they do like each other. And there's a number of times in this story where they meet.
The revelation.
Who knew Jenny Thomason was playing a dual role?
Oh, I'm not going to that day spa.
That's a really, really strong chemical peel.
So he will drool on Colin.
Hello,
in a
Sir
minute.
Lawrence.
So do keep an eye out.
I'm having real Joan Plowright moments. You know Sir Lawrence would just get Joan. She's up for anything.
But yes, I mean, they actually get the relationship right. And there's a number of times in this story where the Doctor and Perry catch up and the first thing they say to each other is, are you all right? And, you know, I was worried about you. It kind of works.
Yeah. Yeah. I think people generally sort of say that kicks in at Mysterious Planet, but I think you're right to kind of locate it earlier. It is kind of the worst thing about Perry, isn't it? That, you know, in every story, including this one, she is just being manhandled by men and dragged around and stuff. And in fact, the character of the DJ is a nice relief from that. He's not lusting after her at all.
Yeah, they wanted to play the DJ.
Sir Laurence Olivier. Jenny Thomason.
Roger Daltrey.
Ah.
They did too. They did. That's right. Again, politely declined from his palatial terrace.
The use of big sticks by Perry kills people. That's a revelation.
No, she's killed someone. This is Perry's first murder for the story, for her time on the show.
Does she do that to Jamie as well in The Two Doctors? Does she give him a whack? Am I thinking of that right?
She's a bit aggressive.
Yeah.
She's poor old Jamie didn't even get a chance to toss his K, but there's a revelation right there. There you go. But we forget how hot the casting of this was at the time. This was absolutely on au courant.
Yeah.
Not just for young ones, but Lexi Sale had a really thriving punch you in the face stand up, which was stand up, you know, in the circuit crowd. So the young folk watching this were going, yeah, yeah. Especially the London crowd. This definitely feels absolutely of the moment.
Do you think
it's just missing Grace Jones?
Yeah,
in that little scene in the woods,
playing Orsini,
naked in body paint.
She could. That would be marvelous.
Yeah. Do you think he's playing against type? Because he's actually really quite sweet in this. Whereas Holland. No. Alexei Sale, because I mean, he was sort of angry and communist and stuff.
He's very communist. His parents and he, when he was a lad, his dad was a steward for in a Liverpool factory. But he was flown to Moscow as ambassadors for the party and shown off to the holiday camps. He said they made Butlins look like Disneyland. He said he's a lad. It was awful. It put him off state communism.
How many gunfire shots did that? But the poor guard just gets riddled with bullets.
Oh, you see, I actually have a problem with those two characters. I think that they're the least successful characters in the story. But also it sort of shows how much the series' moral compass has kind of come off, that they're meant to be good guys. They're sort of a concerned daughter and a doctor who's accompanying her, and they think nothing of just gunning this guard down in machine gun fire.
Yeah.
What happened to good guys kind of knocking out guards to get into places?
Well, it is his attempt to be kind of edgy and stuff, and remember that Holmes' story the previous year that this is very largely based on has no good guys in it. Like everyone is awful. And so we're trying to replicate that here. There are no good guys in this story.
It's like a melted pizza.
Oh, stop it. You're making me hungry. But this again was the tenure of stand-up at the time. We were in the middle of, dare I say, the beginnings anyway of neoliberalism, and Thatcher had been there for how many years was it, James?
Six?
900?
Yeah, 5 or 6.
So again, there was the sense of, will this pleasure ever cease?
Yeah.
And we didn't have the innocence that we had under Harold Macmillan. We didn't have the innocence that we had when Heath was around. Or the hope, you could say. There was this sense of just brittle, burnt irony. And that's why I mean that this is very much of its time. It should have been very successful. This is the thing we felt, listening to the commentaries that you did of season 22, gentle listener, if you go back to it. This is better than the received opinion.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it's probably the best story of the season.
It's certainly the most successful, I think. It works on so many levels.
What do you think is the best, Peter?
Varos.
Do you? I think Varos is terribly overrated.
Ideas-wise, though.
It's got a big idea at the centre of it, Varos.
That's true.
And it does build a world. I mean, the world doesn't look particularly successful on screen, but I believe the world as allegory.
Yeah.
It's entirely contemporary, as is this.
This isn't entirely successful.
Do you know what isn't successful? Have a look at this. It's where the person comes into shot here and their feet aren't on the ground.
On the floor, yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's where
if you'd
fails.
Had everyone in long shot so you'd been able to see their feet, it would have looked like
the floor. You feel like that it's going down the floors rather than being just a patent video effect.
Yeah. That's right. And so the fact that someone walks into frame and their bum is where the floor should be if your brain was processing it doesn't work.
But it is also that idea that a lot of this is mediated through television. So we're talking about Varos, and Varos is about people watching Doctor Who. And part of the thing that I like about Varos is that it imagines Doctor Who as being an incredibly crappy program. So what the people are watching on Varos is terrible. And here everyone's watching things, everyone's on screens and stuff. So having that effect, which looks like the V-hold, the vertical hold on your – like Richard is old enough to remember this as well.
I think we all are.
Yeah.
That's a revelation.
Now, I think she's terrific.
She's fantastic.
Wonderful.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely superb.
I can't believe that there's controversy over the fact that was she giving a performance as a feeble character or was she giving a feeble performance? The performance is excellent.
No, she manages to be downtrodden and a bully and unlikable.
Find the intruders.
do you know that there is actually something to that? The beginning of this scene was cut, and I've seen the start of this scene. I can't remember how. I don't know if it's on the DVD. And she has this very weird performance moment where her and Tarkus are talking, and he says something like, oh, you've got to let her get out of frustrations. She turns around, she goes, shut up! And it's the weirdest performance moment. You can see why they cut it. So they cut in just after that, and it gives context to her strange thing there where she goes, find the intruders!
Mm.
So there we go.
I actually find the DJ really annoying.
I kind of love him.
And
because he's annoying.
Yeah.
And it's the one thing in the story that I don't like.
So, Lawrence, we've got a great role for you.
Alexei Sale.
I don't remember it working at the time. The Alexei Sale inserts just felt, again, odd. But we weren't in the UK.
Yeah.
I guess the thing is that it pays off in the second episode where I really do like him when he drops the axe.
Yeah.
And so I've grown to like it a lot more, but I still find it, I don't know.
I don't know what's happening even in universe. So these people are in suspended animation, but they're conscious enough to hear him talking to them. Like, this is like hospital radio, isn't it? You know, in Britain, hospitals had their own radio station. And so that's very much what this is. And so the people who are frozen in suspended animation waiting to be revived, who are really just being sort of chopped up and sold to their relatives to eat in a traditional season 22 way.
McDonald's.
But we're supposed to imagine that they're listening and they're being entertained. I gather that they actually pay money for the deluxe package, which includes the DJ talking to you.
Why would you want to listen to a local, like, hospital radio station? Would you not just listen to a radio station?
I mean, that's a revelation to me, because I always believed that it was more like, you know, this is like the world that the great healer has created, and to put a mask on it, they've got this, oh, we've got the DJ who talks to your loved dead, one, yeah. So it's sort of a front, right, so that none of the relatives actually question anything that's going on there. It's like, oh, yes, here's our DJ, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it's covering up the fact that they're using the bodies for food.
Yeah, okay.
That's how I feel.
That sounds reasonable. Yeah, so I don't like these two either. And I think it's very Saywardy and very nasty. And, you know, like, he's a drunk as well, which, again, you know, just adds an extra kind of anti-hero thing to it. But, like, the scene of them being tortured later is really not...
Oh, it's horrible. And that's where the character who I think is the most awful analogue of things that go wrong around this point
of Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor's marriage. I'm quite sure that's what Sayward had in mind as you're watching that. Were they married again for the third time while this was being shot? It just feels like it.
That's a Blake 7 location. Look at that.
It is a Blake 7 location. We have a moment to think.
Yeah.
The comedy turban. She's wearing it now, James, isn't she?
Great healer.
I do love Eleanor Bron.
She is spectacular.
The bones Vogel.
I would have preferred Jennifer Saunders, but, it still works.
Imagine that.
And Dawn as Davros. Can you imagine?
Well, I would want Dawn to be Vogel. Would
correct.
I interviewed Nick Mallett, and you know who he wanted Dawn French and Jennifer Saunders to play?
I think I do.
Bits and Dibber.
Sorry, what's that from?
The Mysterious Planet.
Just be the not we here. I don't think I've ever seen the whole thing.
Complete with the sort of strappy sideburns?
Possibly, complete with Silurian costumes.
So Sablon Glitz comes back, remember, in Dragonfire.
Davros. That's a revelation. I didn't realise that was actually the correct pronunciation.
Well, that's why I'm always doing it. Actually, in the Greek,
it's not really a Greek word, but yeah, ish. You could say Davros. Yeah, I think she's just trying to sound very continental, like her gorgeous outfit and everything.
Didn't spend the money on this frickin' turban for nothing.
Yeah,
she really is too damn good, isn't she?
She's wonderful, and actually, a lot of characters in this story have a slight accent.
Yeah,
it should have
the
been
computer does. Tassenbeaker does sometimes.
Tassenbeaker, that's right. But no, her assistant should have been Kenneth Williams.
Yes. Oh,
the lovely Runcible the Fatuous.
Sayward wrote this whilst he was on holiday in Rhodes.
Did he?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't know.
Well, up the M4. Yeah, exactly.
That's a revelation.
Bashing around with Jackie Lane, wherever that accent took him that week. I think she's superb. I wonder if this isn't a nod to the conventions. I wonder if this isn't J&T saying, you know, what those people like behind the scenes.
Yeah,
conventionized. It just feels like all the bickering I've ever seen behind the gilded curtain at every convention I've ever been to. Soz.
Well, maybe even in a TV production. Yeah, I mean, exactly. The whole thing is this sort of huge production.
Or every amateur theatrical.
Why do you keep looking at me, Richard? I'm actually trying to watch this story. Listeners, I hope you're watching this story. I don't know what these people are talking about around me.
But you wouldn't think, based on Sayward's past work in Doc 2, that he had a touch of the camp, would you?
But think about Slipback, which is coming up, which is him trying to do Douglas Adams.
I'm sorry, that's just the filthiest expression we've ever used on this show.
That's with a Douglas safe word.
Would you like a towel?
I need a safe word, people.
A safe word will be slip back.
Oh, God. That's not safe at all.
I love the fact that we never see a camera. We know that this whole thing is being monitored. Everyone's on TV. You know, the great healer's watching TV. The DJ's watching TV. We never see a camera, but Joe Bell is super aware of being on camera. And so we just get these little moments where the characters regard the actual camera, which is sort of high up. It looks so great. It's so well done.
The Doctor does it at the start of episode 2, where he walks into the reception and just catches sight and sort of frowns. It's really well done.
Yeah, yeah. I guess you get that a little bit in Caves too, don't you, with Shara's Jack in his base watching everyone on TV. And
Morgus. See one camera.
Yeah, we do see that.
Yes, shoot first and ask questions later.
The guard's weaponless, so all he can do is run after them.
Straight into the camera. Ow.
Look at this. What magnificent location work.
Yes, this is our last use of film in Doctor Who, in classic Doctor Who, and it looks incredible. It really does look a lot better than videotape.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
But Graham is one of those few directors, he can do location and studio work.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that looks lovely. And I think we said in our Colin Baker episode that Colin is much better on location. That when Colin is in a glitzy light entertainment studio with all of the colour saturation turned up to 11 to try and compete with his wretched costume, he plays it too big. But when he's on location, he's actually really considerably better, I think.
Stop looking at me, Richard. We've already discussed this with Nathan. I'm not going over old things. This is fantastic.
Well, this is a strange thing. I mean, are they talking about the Doctor's penis here?
Yeah. Yep.
That's a revelation.
And at the time, again, thinking this is one of the funniest moments in Doctor Who I've ever seen. It's really perfectly timed.
Look at where his hands are.
It's fantastic.
They both know what they're doing.
They really do. Is it apt, though?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at context. It's all about context. And it's also Colin. I mean, what is his doctor?
That's a revelation.
I rarely use it.
That's a revelation.
I actually love his, you know, slowly hauling himself up the wall acting as well.
You see, I think this crystallizes the relationship between the Doctor and Perry, how it was and how it should have been, when he jumps off and leaves her on top.
It's the best thing ever. It's fantastic.
Well, is he getting his revenge?
Yes. Like
he's just saying, well, screw you, you broke my thing.
Yes. Like, this is fantastic. I'm sorry. Bye.
And she kind of goes, erp, 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 erp.
It does look like the TARDIS food machine is set to Twinkie constantly.
Oh, you fat shaming her.
I actually remember at the time being relieved at how much clothing she was wearing for a change. You know, like it wasn't her all her wretched boob tubes and leotards and stuff. She actually had some clothes on. It was a bit of a revelation, Todd.
She had to cover up all those nut roast rolls.
Revelation.
Yeah, she does look so much better, doesn't she? And when she comes into studio later on, she's wearing the same outfit she was in Time Lash, which is, you know, quite a fetching sort of brown tunic thing. Looks
based on her. I like that too.
It's certainly, I think, one of her best costumes.
The Mysterious Planet one's pretty good too.
Mm. And Mindwalk.
Yeah.
Sort of Vision in pink.
It's okay.
But it's always those Daisy Duck shoes.
Yeah.
And those stupid things in Time Lash. And she, not Time Lash, what is it? Mysterious Planet, when she's stomping around what, the New Forest in a pair of Daisy Duck pumps. Foolish bint.
Have we had the Australian cliffhanger yet?
Oh,
we're about to come up to it.
Yes.
Actually, I was thinking about that because I can't remember.
I can't remember what it is either.
I think it was there.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Just that.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't the Dalek. Well, it was just before the Dalek, wasn't it?
That's pretty shoddy. That's one of the shoddy ones.
It should have been the Dalek. It could have been
this.
It could have been an end of one Dalek, end of episode one Dalek reveal.
But it's
although we have had them before.
But it's always the case of these. They just went, oh, this is the time, boom. And if they'd gone 20 seconds or 30 seconds either side, half the time, it's a better cliffhanger.
But didn't production build them in?
No. That's why we had the ones, you know, where the hacienda is this way.
That's the best one ever. I love that. It's my favourite.
Having said that, like the cliffhanger for episode 3 of this is different depending on which territory you're in.
Okay, well, let's talk about that when we get to it.
I think you're all being very kind here. None of you have surpassed the Marley linoleum floor of the Exelons.
Yes, the bath mat of doom.
Which, again, was not meant to be a cliffhanger.
No, it wasn't.
No, they had to move things around. I think it might have been trying to get into the city and the Daleks coming around the corner. But they said, no, we've got a nice bit of floor here. We'll make that the cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Look, it would have been really hard to lay. I found it quite exciting.
Is Morbius coming back?
Oh!
I'd really like that carpet.
I want the Morphertons back.
Yes.
Oh, and can we have Jackie Hill as well, please?
Oh, please.
But with
humans are unparalleled in their dexterity.
Morpho brains.
But Meg lost Jackie or an earthly child?
I like Meg lost Jackie, actually.
This is the thing. She's good in everything.
Yeah. I think we said at the time, she takes a very thankless role and humanizes it. She
gives some dignity.
Yeah, absolutely. She's
and wipes the walls with Lala. It's quite embarrassing. Kind of embarrassing, isn't it? Who else is on screen? Don't know, can't see. And she's got longer bangs and everything, hasn't she? Her extensions are even better.
Yes. Yep. Oh, dear.
Jackie, we'd like you back on the series. We've got a wonderful role for you, the mutant. Roll around in the sperm.
He does
Jackie
feel like
Lane.
No, he does look like not
save
this
on
bloke.
The makeup, Bill.
No, that should have been Larry. He does look like someone who Pierce Brosnan would have just dissed, doesn't he? They all look like of course, this is Roger was still Bond, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
But only for once. Oh.
He's totally Wham there, young doctor.
I thought that was Roger.
That's a revelation.
So
it is a revelation.
No, it's Richard Keel. Look at the teeth.
It's amazingly gross, isn't it? They'd wanted to do a glass Dalek for a while, I think.
Terry Nation, the Daleks.
Right.
/ mutants.
Yeah, it's actually in Doctor Who in an exciting adventure with the Daleks.
There's a glass Dalek.
Yeah.
Right. So this is something that we've always wanted to be able to do. It is gross, but I think it looks amazing. Like, I think they're clearly feeding air into sort of the stuff around his head so that it, like, the head's all sort of throbbing and stuff.
Seems like a big old vein.
And there's a lot of KY jelly
it's
being
getting very Kenny Everett.
Flushed about.
Safe word, slip back.
Are you getting Captain Crimmin noises as well?
When are we doing the Kenny Everett podcast?
Ah, we're doing it now. I remember thinking
that
the way that he turns around so quickly is fantastic. Like, you can believe that he's a disembodied head.
Well, I thought the ship had blown up, you know, when he was escaping and all that. They managed to save the head somehow.
Like the pating so going cool. off into space.
Can we not mention that?
Let's long get back before to this. Futurama, we had this.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's it. He's a head in a jar.
It kind of looks a bit like Tom Baker.
That's true.
We've really got a great role for you, Tom.
And it's the same off-screen attitude too at the time.
James, please tell me, in what way does he look like Tom Baker?
The sort of pulsating brain looks like
the silhouette. Curly head. The silhouette. It's a season 18 Tom. Yeah, silhouette. Oh, throb.
It looks like an Exelon to me. Looks like an Exelon.
Oh, beautiful.
With his big cowl over his head.
Or
more like a gel guard.
Yeah, here's a bit.
Do we know what ever happened? I need Brendan here. Do we know what ever happened to bloke on right with nice perm? Because he does definitely feel like someone that would have been in 30 seconds of Bond before being thrown the keys to the hire car and told to sod off and sort it out for yourself while I go and taunt Caroline Munro in my lovely knitwear ensemble.
He had a number one hit with Careless Whisper the next year.
That's a revelation.
Did I say Caroline John? Caroline Munro just did a piece for The Guardian on her career, which mentions the lovely Roger and his knitwear. They both started as knitwear models. And she said he was lovely and we talked about knitwear.
I have to say that both of the mutants in this story, I think, give good performances, the one on the location and him, as it builds to being the Dalek.
Yeah, they're really good.
It's quite touching when the mutant outside is dying.
Oh, dear.
Oh, now it's going horrible. Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, punch the woman in the stomach. That's what we want to see on Tea Time TV. Yeah.
Hashtag Davros 2.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But these are Graham Harper's creative decisions, aren't they?
Well, I think it's the script. I mean, like this thing where we're going to, like, you know, where Colin wants to carve bits of her face off. Like, you know, I just don't think that's the right tone for us to be taking.
Yeah, I actually think Mr. Lilt there is one of the most misbegotten characters ever to appear in Doctor Who. He's so unpleasant that he takes out a flick knife and says, "I must mark her," which yeah. is just not Doctor Who in any way.
No, he doesn't do it. Yeah, yeah. So this is a great character as well. And
great actor, William Gordon.
Yeah. So this is a response, isn't it, to is there something where he says, no, I want to sort of create an amoral kind of character who's not – I can't remember. There's some story.
Is it Lytton? Did he want to create his own Lytton? Well, Lytton was his, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, Lytton was his. I don't know, but I think that this is a – that he's a good character, and this is him trying to be Robert Holmes and having a sort of Holmesian double act with these two. And I think it's reasonably successful, and partly just because William Gaunt's really good.
I think everybody in this scene is just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the characters are well written in this story, but they're all played to perfection.
Yeah.
So, and in fact, the story's just full of Holmesian double acts for want of using that expression.
Vogel and Kara.
Vogel and Kara.
Tarkus and Lilt.
Yeah. The Doctor and Natasha.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Joe
yeah.
Bill and...
So not the Doctor. Yeah. The Young
it
Doctor.
Took me a little while.
The Young Doctor, yeah.
Joe Bell and Tess and Beaker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Joe Bell is obviously based on Mr. Joy Boy from... Mm-hmm. Which you should just really put your iPhone down right now at this point, switches off, and then go and read The Loved One, which is incredibly brutal. Like, it's actually more brutal than this. And
that's a revelation.
Yeah, it's really horrible and super, you know, like Evelyn Waugh clearly was a truly terrible person.
I was measuring Royal North Shore Hospital, well, a large part of it, when I was reading that as a as a student and assistant architect thing. I had to go and measure lots of nasty bits of it. And it was the perfect thing to be reading, sitting outside for an hour, thinking, I've got to go back into the bowels of that. No, I'll read a bit more of this. It's still more fun.
It's really horrible. It's super funny. I read it at school for some reason. I don't know why they thought it was appropriate, but I guess we didn't really understand it when we were in year nine. Now reading as an adult, it's horrible.
So are you saying that Eric Saywood toned something down?
Yeah, a bit.
Well, saying that this is based on The Loved One is doing The Loved One a disservice. I mean, it's just wholesale ripped from it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, The Loved One has lots of stuff about, you know, the relationship between England and America and stuff about Hollywood. And, like, it's broader and got more interesting things. But it's got this this place called Whispering Glades, which is the sort of giant necropolis, so tranquil repose. Even that there's a little bit of dialogue about how Americans have embarrassing names for this. You know, when Perry hears it's called tranquil repose, she says that's like something we would come up with in the States. And so it's a massive necropolis and it's, you know, beautiful and wonderful, but it's, you know, racially segregated and Jewish people aren't allowed to be buried there. And it's really, really kind of horrible. And then there's the the dog cemetery that the main character works at, the pet cemetery, the name of which Happy Hunting Ground, I think it's called. And the end of The Loved One, Richard, do you remember? It's,
I don't want to spoil it.
I'm not going to spoil it, but it is just about the blackest, darkest thing that I've ever read. It's wonderful.
Well, that's Stephen King tried to ape it with Pet Sematary, didn't he? But he never got quite as...
No, it's nowhere near as terrifying as The Loved One.
Look at this lovely location filming. IBM Portsmouth.
Is that where it is?
Yeah. I don't know why they built pyramids there, but they did.
Still there to this day, children. You can still go along and toss a Jabberlite at each other. So
what do we think of the timing thing? People critique season 22 because they don't seem to work out exactly how to do two-part stories with 44-minute episodes.
Well, I think they've worked it out by now. But here, the necessity was that these two were doing pantomime, and so they couldn't do certain blocks of recording in studio, so you had to write them on location.
Right.
Yeah, so the doctor's wearing a pantomime cape there.
Well, I mean, they're not on in the studio at all for episode this, one.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's a lot more studio, not a lot more location stuff than we would ordinarily expect in a story in this era?
It's about the same. I think maybe Mark of the Rani had double the location filming allocated to it.
But that's because they got an extra crew, right, for free.
Right.
So, I mean, but episode two, I think they're indoors a lot more.
Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I think it just seems like there's more location work because it's all clumped together in one episode. So,
yeah, I agree, James. And the fact that Doctor and Perry are all on location for this episode, just, yeah.
Yeah, and I think people might get it in reverse in season 22 where they say that the Doctor and Perry just take forever to arrive, so why are they keeping them separate? I think they were probably trying to do the inverse, which was set up a convincing world and then bring the Doctor and Perry into it. Yeah. It doesn't quite work, but it's all right.
Yeah, I mean, he comes in and breaks it all. Like they come in and just sort of wreck it. They and the Daleks sort of come in and wreck it, I think.
I actually think Varys is the worst story in terms of keeping the Doctor and Perry out of the world through the whole device in the TARDIS console and having a hissy fit and all that. That's the one thing in that story that I find the pacing really bad. If I had to pick an episode this season, that's where they've stretched. I feel like they've stretched one episode of 25 minutes into 45.
I mean, they do it a bit in Time Lash, don't they? They're running under time and they just record a whole lot of kind of stuff that's marking time in the TARDIS console room with Herbert.
Yeah, but that's a bit later on.
Yeah. I think it depends on the quality of the writing. Here, the scenes between them are good, and so you don't mind watching endless scenes of just the Doctor and Perry wandering around.
And you know, and these guys here in this scene have got so much exposition of world building with the Great Healer and the food across the galaxy and then their mission. You don't mind at all. Oh my God, I just love this. I can just sit here and watch it all day.
We missed that scene with Jobel talking to his assistants, and I think it must be the only reference to nose picking in Doctor Who.
Not even in the new series.
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, Tom Baker went around with a big old booger hanging out of his nose in Keeper of Traken.
He did though, didn't he? That's quite
nice. Nose Picker is a Cockney reference for many other. You know what I'm saying, don't you? No. Once a nose picker, always a nose picker, son. It's, you know, it's pretty much the same as, you know, shirt lifter.
That's a revelation. Sorry, guys, I'm tuning in and out of your conversation, but I'm actually watching this episode.
Thinking of the listener at home, probably loves us talking all over each other and the show. Otherwise, you might as well just sit and watch it with this turned off and read the. Oh, no, you wouldn't. You'd go and turn everything off and read The Loved One, wouldn't you?
Yes, exactly.
In a comedy turban.
Whilst watching Soylent Green.
Which Saywood said he hadn't watched when he was writing this, and it really that's perfectly fair because it was so mimetic at the time. You didn't need to have seen Soylent Green to know it.
No,
it's like most Kubrick films. You don't need to have seen them.
Yeah.
to get the message, get the drill, get the. I love that it's all being shot in the Zero Room.
It's
the same set.
That's a revelation.
I just found it lying around in props somewhere.
You're very observant. That is very true.
I'm just waiting for Bostock to levitate.
I was going to say Bostock, he actually looks smelly.
Yeah, he looks oily, doesn't he?
Like he looks like a convention here at a Doctor Who convention around this time.
You needed a line there where Kara said, oh, it said you only have to breathe on a victim. You die. I said, no, I leave that to Boston.
I do love her line, the odours of nature have charms all their own. She is so tremendous.
You've totally been to an old-style Doctor Who convention.
And her pleasing personality.
That's a revelation.
She is so good. Oh, I love her so much. It's a brilliant performance. And you know, she went on to be in Emmerdale wearing a blonde wig.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Or as I like to call it, Emmerdale.
She once rang the office. Gary Gillett answered the phone and almost had a coronary on the spot and was like, oh, yes, right. And then hung up and said, Jenny Thomason just rang us. She said she can't come to the awards because she can't get a dress at Monsoon.
One thing about the makeup here, she's got this helmet thing with the lines there, but then she's obviously meticulously drawn on
her forehead.
Her forehead, so that you can't actually move that helmet up or down so that it matches.
It is a very strange choice.
It's a puzzling creative choice.
A puzzling creative choice, yeah.
Exactly. But it works. She's got her pseudo layer buns at the side.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was very well regarded from, was it Upstairs, Downstairs? Or the Duchess of Duke Street. It was one of the two. She played a lead role.
Wow, okay.
As like someone below stairs.
Right, right. Wow, look at that. They built those purposely, didn't they? Yes,
what are those IBM pyramids?
That's actually quite well done. It's a glass shot, isn't it?
Looks amazing.
Yeah.
I love this.
This doesn't quite work.
No, but I love it.
There's no way the Doctor could miss sight of the Dalek here.
Oh, no, that is good. Again, having it, rather than appear in the background, having them in the background and having it cross in front of the camera. And it is an incredible location. Doctor Who, until the new series, Doctor Who, I guess Frontier in Space, using a sort of modernish building to be a building from the future.
Hmm. Two, in fact.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not something they do very much, though.
Hmm. It is a good location. I think you can see people wandering around with clipboards like behind windows occasionally.
Oh, this is so gross.
Oh, it's horrible.
But again, it's nicely shot. I do like, Tarkus in the foreground while we're torturing people in the background.
I do like my misogynist torturing to be well shot.
Yes, yes, quite. It's gross, isn't it?
Tarkus is a good character. He's generally sort of amoral, isn't he? He allows all of this to go on, but he does have good intentions.
Does he?
I think so. He's trying to safeguard tranquil repose. He just wants to get back to what they're doing. He says it later on and, help people and save lives.
I guess my
friend tortures a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, amoral. Yeah,
it's pretty...
You look like you're seeing this for the first time, Richard.
In some ways I am, but I'm just remembering again British SF and how it never properly veered into the Americana of Spielberg and Lucas. It stayed post-teen, didn't it? It was always a thread of dystopian.
Yeah.
We knew what was coming. I'm just looking at the footage of the Arctic splitting up today like crazy paving on the news and then looking at this and thinking, well, exactly, there's too many people to feed and the atmosphere's becoming acidic. We've always known this and Doctor Who was always right there. We've talked about Rachel Carson's Silent Spring in Planet of the Giants and really way, way back. I'm most impressed watching this and the beautiful lighting and the staging. Carpen knows how to set up a multi-shot.
Yeah, yeah.
And get it to look interesting really, really well. But also to then show us exactly what the script's going on. These were really intelligent, creative people working on this on this show. And then we have Alexis Hale, who again, I don't think he's well served by the script or by the part, but he's just there as a cipher, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a story like this is a good example of the old studio system where the different creatives are bringing different layers to things. Harper's bringing an entirely new layer to this story in the way that he's shooting it. And it just wouldn't have been there with some of the other directors of the era.
Ron Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Here we go. So we're heading towards our cliffhanger.
Look at that. Colin's eaten a few pies this season, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, just wait until next year.
Mm. Do you think there might be a restoration team special edition somewhere where he falls on the marble block and it shatters?
we have to remember his veto of the character options figure, don't we? Oh. Season 23. Yeah, you remember that? They did a full carve. Was it? I'm trying to remember. Edward did a full carve, but they... No.
Colin said no.
No.
That's not going on sale.
No. It's sucking my gut.
Had the season 22 Colin head, but the body of Joan Sim.
it was a little bit Thomas the Tank Engine in the end.
I just think the hair is truly horrible in season 23 as well.
I'd give you that.
Yeah. I do like all those fanboys when Jodie Whittaker started being the Doctor, all those fanboys explaining that the Doctor would never do anything trivial like give herself blonde highlights, and you kind of go, where were you boys during the 80s, for God's sake?
Exactly.
Well, the 70s.
I love the way Hartnell with this, how that thing's rocking in the background. And
I think that's great. It's setting it up.
Yeah.
Oh, that long shot was good. If only we could have had more of that.
And that's, I think that's a great. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, do you know, it was originally supposed to fall onto the camera and go dark, so like cut to black because it had cut off all of the light, and it didn't work, and so he flared it to white instead.
Right.
Works really well.
Yeah. Mm. Rather fabulously, the working title for this story was The End of the Road.
What was it?
It's not a very 80s Doctor Who name. No,
it's a very new series title,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, so Mutant many people. Kim Barker. Do you remember when Doctor Who used to have a big guest cast? Like, you know, we have these new, like, Series 11 where there'll be, like, three people or something.
And but one of them will be a frog.
No.
Yeah, I mean, 80s Doctor Who just had endless guest casts. Now, you look at Warriors of the Deep and you forget who some of the characters are because there's just so many of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also they were names. They had good actors in every one of them, like we're seeing here. We may not know them so well out here, but if you were living in the UK and ever went to Rep Theatre or ever just watched any of the long ongoing series, these were names that got you in. What were the ratings like on this one, Todd? Do you recall?
The ratings were, they went up. Like, I remember them being strong at the end of the season.
A Dalek bump?
Yeah, no, there was a bump.
Yeah. A Dalek bump, yes.
But interestingly, the bump came for episode 2 because episode 1 had the same ratings as Time Lash episode 2 the previous
week. So episode 1 was 7.4 million and episode 2 was 7.7.
Right, yeah, there you go. I couldn't quite remember.
It's respectable, isn't it, for the time?
I think so.
And it was back in the top. It was like about 65th for the week. Like, from Time Lash onwards, the ratings in the places went up, but you know, it's too late by then. The show was on hiatus.
Now we're playing tea cozy hindsight moments, because that's what we all do, isn't it? Have a custard cream. You can leave the rich tea where they're sitting. Let's go for the deep and good biscuits. My favourite moment of Trump in the UK this week is that little sign that a grandma held up. Was it said, "Dear Queen, don't give him the good biscuits." I hope that Colin is thinking the same for Davros. But if they'd now we've got custard creams, they're canon, aren't they, bloody
my
hell.
My friend's had a terrible accident. That's a revelation.
Would this actually have gone on to simply be respectable after this hiccup of if we hadn't had the response from Michael Gray and all the rest of them and they just let it keep going and not do the hiatus, which, again, no one seemed to know what to do with it? How would it have been if we just had two more years? This has been good writing.
Well, I remember feeling that what's the problem with Doctor Who in the 80s, like the early 80s, is that they set a world and then they just put the Doctor in it and nothing very interesting happens. Like, there's a series of captures and escapes and stuff, and then just sort of we get on with our lives. And so
John Wiles, you mean?
Well, maybe. But the storytelling.
What's wrong with the Space Museum? That's an outrageous accusation.
I actually really like the Space Museum. So I just think it seemed a bit tired and they stopped knowing why they were doing it. And it has also stopped, I think, part of moving away from Saturday nights and just the TV landscape. It just becomes yet another thing. And they're not thinking about who the audience is beyond the people that J&T meets at conventions and stuff.
I think the main problem must be Sayward. I mean, I'm not as down on Eric Sayward as some people are, but I don't think he's interested in the character of the Doctor.
No. Yeah.
He wants to be writing Blake 7, doesn't he?
Yeah, actually, he might have done better on Blake 7, although it wouldn't have been as clever. Can you imagine Avon and Villa spouting Sayward dialogue at each other?
You must think me a fool!
He couldn't have done worse with season 4. I've just started watching that again after I can't tell you how many years since I watched it. I've never opened the DVD box, so it's at least since VHS. It doesn't really stand up as well, does it?
Do you know what I think is...
Oh, moment. Todd's having a moment. Yes.
Here's the shot of the Doctor realising
and
he's being monitored.
His magnificent organ. What?
I love that look too.
He knows something's up, right? And
it's underplayed too.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Colin is so on point on this.
I actually think Colin's performance in this season is pretty good. It's pretty up there with everyone else. I think it goes slightly off when someone meddles the next season and says, no, play it like this and be more jolly and do this. Takes him away from his instincts, and I think it goes off the tracks.
Do you? Okay.
He is actually a very good actor.
We can go that far.
Not on audio. But, you know, given something meaty... And understanding.
Thank you.
Word slip back.
But given something to sink his teeth into, he actually can do a pretty good job. Yes, thank you.
I don't think it's Colin particularly is the problem in this era at all.
No.
Yeah. And I just think it's the tone, like something horrible is going on.
And I also think Colin has an inclination to play roles big. You know,
sexy female computer voice.
That's you, James.
Hello, he's not understated.
That's a revelation.
And so I think if a director encourages him to bring it down, then, you know, it's pretty good. I do actually love this voice. Can you imagine if every Doctor Who computer had this voice? Can you imagine the boss, sexy boss or Votan?
Should have been. They're all taking the piss out of Major Barrett, aren't they? As you should.
Wasn't it Juno Baker doing the voice?
If you just had a look at the captions there, the computer in brackets said sexily, you're welcome.
I love this scene. There's a moment that the Doctor and Perry just look at each other as she's going through things and they just look at them. Look at them. It's fantastic. Yes, we both think the same thing. And now I'm going to put on my face. Oh, it's fantastic.
I think you're right about the size of Colin's performance, that he kind of lacks interiority. And, like, classic Doctors don't really have interiority, but coming back from Davison, where you could very definitely tell what he was thinking, he was always trying to do something with a line. Mm. Whereas
he looks like Eric Sayward then.
He does.
That's a revelation. That's the revelation.
Wow. It's one of Sayward's own wigs, I think.
I wonder if that wasn't deliberate. Who was pissing Graham Harper off the most?
Precisely.
Because he really was the Dougie Cameron light, wasn't he? Just because he was kept it together and held order, he still had that military precision and that very short fuse.
Canfield he'd worked with Canfield.
Yeah, he'd been an ingenue.
Yeah.
They both worked on the Seeds of Doom together.
Right.
Mm. I was going to say, I forgot that we were still on location here in what would have been episode 3, but, you know,
yeah.
There is a lot of location work.
What are these things? They're amazing looking.
It is a great location and it is really good. And in a sort of proleptic reference to the parting of the ways, we have Bastic Bullets. Here.
Oh, welcome to the stage. Once again.
Can I have Orsini's jacket? Look at that. It's amazing.
I like the gun actually with the little sort of
I like the little nod to Sophie Aldred's screen test we haven't seen yet, and that he's wearing her jacket on the left there.
She's got badges.
It's very upper middle class.
The gun reminds me a bit of the Keys of Marinus in the little pod things that come in with the wards.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Words never heard. That gun reminds me of the Keys of Marinus.
I like this screen as well. The looking through screens, like having a transparent thing, so we shoot them through a screen.
Very new.
Yeah.
Did you do that a bit last year in Caves?
Yeah, he had holograms where people were walking around.
They did too, how beautiful it was. I'm definitely getting a vibe that this scene is titillation for the production office on how they would be casting the Seventh Doctor and Companion, because honestly, tropishly, it's almost scene for scene. I'm not a little girl anymore.
I love how they both have rat's tails.
Yeah, that's very period, isn't it?
And this, of course, was supposed to be a flying Dalek, but they couldn't manage to do it.
But they seem to have brought a lot of explosives.
That's a great explosive.
It's huge.
I believe this is an aerodrome.
Plastic heads.
That's a revelation.
It says plastic heads on the closed captions instead of Bastic, which is what it actually is.
Long-suffering person doing the captions like, what? What? Plastic.
Is it an old World War II?
Yeah.
Still talking to her and getting more frustrated. It's fantastic.
Perpetual instatement.
I do like the use of the word inhumation as well, the burial.
I think Eric's having fun with this script, and you don't get a sense that he's having fun a lot of the time.
I think, you know, like he's branching out. I think just the military stuff, you know, that he wants to do something a bit more satirical.
And that he was away from the production office, and so maybe he wasn't have the stress of... We have to remember what it was like for him as well.
Yeah.
And JNT was just rattling around, really giving no feed except criticism, and then going to a convention and bringing back whatever received fan wisdom was of the time. Yeah. That really didn't help.
But also, too, JNT wasn't allowing old writers to come back. You know, Eric's talked about that, you know, and that's a problem.
Was this the era at which he was spending most of his time doing his Christmas panto as well?
Well, that's what the Colin and Nicola were doing with Anthony Ainley, I think, at the time, the Christmas panto. I mean, where's your priority?
Yeah, oh, so that's why they're not in episode one in the studio. Yeah.
I think they might have decided to shoot in Portsmouth because it was near the panto location as well.
Oh, God. Well, look, I mean, those things are still important. And one of the things that Russell and, like, the other three-letter initialism, like that RTD and JNT have in common, is that they're both acutely aware that part of their job is to keep the show in the public eye and make it huge. And Russell manages to do that by creating the sort of, you know, Doctor Who cinematic universe with bunches of spin-offs and all sorts of things. And he does it really successfully.
Well, he also creates a show people want to watch. So.
Well, yeah, there's that as well.
Yeah, the pilot massage with Mestor didn't get off the ground.
Wow, I would watch the hell out
of that,
Todd.
Safe word when you need it.
Spiel Snape, Spiel Snape. Oh, Edward. Our safe word for today will be either Romulus or Remus. Take your choice.
But not both at once.
No, well, they're interchangeable.
Haven't they been embalmed? Look at that. This story just looks amazing, doesn't it? It looks really good. I genuinely think that when the show came back in 2005, this was one of the few stories you could have taken and shown alongside it, and it wouldn't have looked like a museum piece. The Graham's really good with his studio cameras. Everything's covered brilliantly.
It's the lighting and the setting. It's also the positioning of the actors and the way that the camera moves around them. You're not aware of a camera presence, but look how many jump cuts there are. There's a lot of...
I actually love Colin's delivery of that line.
Oh, yes. And then boom, boom.
Sorry. And the Christmas Daleks. So excited to see Christmas Daleks.
They're beautiful, aren't they?
Who would have thought that colour scheme would work? It looks amazing.
And they look even better when they come back in a few years' time with the nice, sexy eyes.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've had a bit more money spent on them. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're new props, aren't they, when they come back for Remembrance?
I think they made like a half dozen new props for this, so I wouldn't be surprised if they reused them.
Oh, okay.
The white Daleks in this island are new props.
Yeah.
Right.
And you can tell when the grey ones turn up at the end, they look like they're a bit more rattly.
So this is just a redress set of the other office, isn't it?
Oh, so it is. They've just turned the lights blue instead of pink.
Yeah.
Someone's turned on the air conditioning in the zero room.
This is just like this creepiness of his character there is just...
It's gross, yeah.
And it is weird how the Doctor sends Perry off with him. Go with the sexual predator, Perry.
In the loved one,
by now.
In the loved one, his analogue, Mr. Joy Boy, lives with his mother and is coded as gay, isn't he? Like he's a cosmetician. And there's a wonderful detail where there's a female lead who's not really a lead because the book so misogynist, and he expresses his love for her by sending a series of corpses up to be kind of given the finishing touches. It's her job to give them the finishing touches, and the corpses all have big smiles on them because he's so happy about how their relationship is going. That's what I mean by toning it down, that the loved one is very, very much nastier than this.
But I love the fact here that he drops into his English accent and he's a beautiful character.
Yeah. 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 He is very sweet.
Is that shot differently? Like, is there some sort of Vaseline or something on the lens?
On the lens.
In this, in these shots?
Yeah, it's shot in soft focus.
Yeah, I thought.
He's sort of one of the unsung heroes of Doctor Who. These characters who come in and just align with the Doctor and his friends because they're good characters and then end up dying horribly.
In fact, he's the only good person in the whole thing.
Yeah.
So he has to die.
Yeah.
Horribly.
Horribly.
It is a shame,
horribly.
That he dies.
I like how well done that is too. Like, I don't, you know, like killing characters for effect I think is sort of terribly cheap and stuff. But having it done just in audio and not hearing it, I think it's really good with the Doctor's reaction and stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's over the microphone, isn't it? With Harry saying, why'd you kill him?
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Look at this lovely scene. She's doing such a good job.
So this is the temptation of
Tazembika.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? It takes Davros's character back to where it started, because in the previous two stories he's just been a cipher, whereas in Genesis Davros could read people and manipulate them.
What do you think of Malloy as Davros?
He does a nice line in a gurgling laugh.
It's hard to say, isn't it? Because, again, it comes down to script and direction. So Malloy, he's good on the audios. He's great with Colin in the audios. Really, really nice. And I think he's lovely. This is Malloy here now, isn't it?
Yes.
He's lovely in this as well. He's a meatier Davros, isn't he, to go with our current theme. There's a lot of awful in this awful-themed podcast today, isn't
it? He's better than I like him in all of his three stories. I think he's better than David Goodison.
I think probably the problem is that, you know, in Genesis you've got six episodes with him, you've got quite a lot of time, and you get to see him before he turns into the creator of the Daleks, when he doesn't have that mythic status. And
I think that's also the point. You get the fragility of the actor himself, Michael Wisher, and the tiny bath chair and the withering, and you get lots of pullback shots of Davros. But Malloy definitely is a far more rubicund Davros. Yeah. He's definitely been eating better.
Yeah.
Yes.
what both of them get, and I think what probably Julian Bleach gets as well, is the different registers, you know, that he has a very quiet voice and perhaps even slightly camp, like when he speaks very quietly.
I'm right here.
I love this, how they enter the Daleks in this scene.
Oh, this is – oh.
Gorgeous.
Oh, there he goes. Oh, this look. Oh, the little puppy look. Oh. And now he's dead. Oh, he does fall in a very comfortable way, doesn't he?
I think it's a great extermination.
Yeah.
It's better than people just lying down.
She barely reacts.
In Destiny.
Well, in fact, I love her line, you know, like that.
Well, like we were saying earlier with Colin being very external, and that's all interior, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
This is a nice little scene.
I like the fact that he has taken it upon himself to call in an outside force, which we're going to see shortly. Like, there's something going on in the background that you don't necessarily pick up. Yeah.
And we are made privy to everyone else's.
You're a very naughty man, Tom.
It's a revelation.
I love that line.
I think we should have a little
chat. I mean, look at the framing of that.
Well, that's the camera. That's what we're going to see. Tazembika has been watching all along. And, in fact, they were all looking up in the air while they were conspiring, only to discover that, in fact, look, they have been being observed by the Great Healer the whole time. Do you remember how cut up this was in when we first saw it in Australia?
Oh, this ripped the climax out of it, didn't they, with Jo Bell?
Yeah, yeah.
Or did they?
Yeah. So that scene, there's a, you know, the scene, and we're getting ahead of ourselves, but whatever, where Jor-El dies, and it's perfectly timed. I don't know how it was achieved, but his toupee falls off onto the ground, like just a moment, you know, there's a little bead.
Wonderful, because at the start of that scene, he's fussing around with it in the mirror. Yeah.
But all that was cut when it was shown in Australia. And so she rushes in and then she rushes off and we don't know what she's done. Like she threatens him and maybe goes to stab him because there's a prolonged scene where he's sort of stumbling with a syringe coming out.
Well, she does the thing where she goes to stab him and then you hear him sort of go and then it cuts to her running through the corridor so you don't see any of the aftermath.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, you don't see any of that. Again, the Dalek eye stalk just came to shock when she turned around. Another great directional touch.
The blocking is so good on this.
Mm. How did he? Oh, because he's got a gas mask on. I was just wondering how does Bostock manage to sneak up on anyone?
That's a revelation.
Smell anything in that thing.
The music in this as well. Is Graham Harper the only director who ever got an actual score out of Roger Limb rather than squeaks and squawks and Arc of Infinity soundscape?
Yeah. I'm struggling to remember it, but...
It's like Caves of Anzani. It's the second iteration of that.
Right. And Roger Limb did that as well.
Yeah.
Did directors get to choose who did the music? No.
No.
It was just assigned.
No, not in those days.
Chris Canfield always said, we'll be having none of that Aussie, striny, blokey type noise for me. Thank you. I want the London saxophone quartet. Thank you very much.
Maybe he just made his preferences known ahead of time. Mm. Yeah.
That we did tell that story on the podcast, I think. Yeah.
And, you know, it's actually a little bit debunked, that story.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Although... Damn. I mean, there's
a revelation.
There is literally one episode of the 52 Blake 7 episodes. Only one of them isn't scored by Dudley Simpson, and it is Canfield's.
And do you know why that is? It's because they were running behind on their schedule so much that Dudley couldn't keep up with the finished episodes, and Jewel was the only one where he said, I can either do this episode or I can do the next episode. You can't have both.
Wow. So it's a coincidence.
It's a coincidence. Yeah.
Okay. Mm.
Maybe.
Richard remains unconvinced. I would have liked to have played the president's wife, actually, if I was in this. It would have been relaxing, you know.
Do you like a bit of frothing?
Yeah, yeah. I can froth on command, actually. I can froth on command.
Who is lying underneath that?
I'm like Elizabeth Moss.
Or is it just a mannequin?
Well, the hands look real.
No, they're borrowed from the Thunderbirds. They're Lady Penelope's hands from close-ups in the Thunderbirds.
Or from Sutex Cushion.
Don't you know how she's always coming and saying, Mr. Jor-El? I think Big Finish has missed a range here. They could have the Mr. series. They have her, Mr. Jor-El. And then guess who else?
Who else, Peter?
Senator Alcott from The Mind of Evil. Mr. Fu-Pang.
Stop it. Just stop it.
If you say that three times, Peter, there will be a box set by the time we finish recording.
Then we'll have Mr. Mestor.
If you say Mr. Fu Fang three times, a Chinese dragon appears.
A vinyl one. Oh, so here we go. Yeah, here we go.
Mr. Jor-El,
I actually, she is so horrible. I mean, he is so horrible to her. Like the what does he say? I think I would rather have sex with my own mother or something. Yeah, rather snog my own
like
mother.
A fat fawning creep or something like that.
It's really gross.
It's really awful.
Yeah, yeah.
And she says to him, I knew you could be cruel.
Yeah.
She likes him even though he's a horrible person.
So here we go.
We're not requiring much acting from Clive here.
He does say, yeah, I have the pick of the women. So I think he's really pushing his boundaries there.
Like you.
Oh. Yeah, awful.
Own a fawning creep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that really gives an insight, doesn't it?
Yeah.
to think I almost threw up everything.
That's a revelation. Oh, my God, here we go.
Death by syringe. I don't know if this should be in Doctor Who.
No, well, the ABC censors clearly didn't think it should.
It's also the way she moves. She's got a very pathetic kind of
gait.
So
here we go.
And it looks like Steadicam as well. Like,
Oh, yes, we're just going to walk past. And
yeah, we'll just, we're nothing to see here.
Ow!
Yeah. Oh, but then this.
She's just got a weapon in her hand.
And all the gunge has gone out of it into him.
Like, and do we think it's embalming fluid? Do we think that that's what that is? Yeah.
So this was cut out of the Australian.
Yeah.
Well, that's unfair, isn't it?
But, you know, he looks down.
Oh, my God. He's got a toupee. That's a revelation.
No, it's not. You knew it was a toupee the entire time.
No, I didn't.
Goodbye, Tassambica. I did love you.
Mm. Oh, dear. This isn't going to go well for her.
Oh. Jazz hands.
Oh, messed up.
Why are Daleks italicized in the subtitles for these things?
I don't know.
Now, they should bring back the Century 21 typeface, shouldn't they, Peter?
Yes.
Which had a cuneiformic style to it.
For when the Daleks speak.
Yes.
And convert everything into rels.
Yes. I wish Big Finish would throw some lines like, oh, how many rels has it been now? It's been forever.
So this is one of the endings of part 3.
Oh. See, I like this too. Like, and the way that he's not looking at the camera. There's something interesting about that choice.
Which is actually quite a good ending.
Ah. Yeah,
you're in terrible danger.
So he is looking at a camera.
It's also one of the instances where the first thing Perry says is, I've been worried about you, to the doctor.
Yeah.
Davros is a puppet in this one, isn't it? The head is a puppet.
And this is the
The head is Terry Molloy.
But how does he do that?
So he's sitting on an office chair
in a gimbal
and swiveling around.
Not that fast.
Yeah. And apparently it was very uncomfortable. Mm. Yeah, but
chafed knees all around.
Yes.
It's fooled me to this day.
It's very funny, actually. Because if you're in the close-ups, you can see that. That you can still see the line between the latex and Molloy's.
No, I assumed it was a two shot. So, when the head swivels, it was a.
Part. No. When the head swivels, it's him swinging round.
That's dedication. That's cruelty.
Yeah. But it's really effective, isn't it? Because it helps sell the fact that he's just a head.
James, where was the other end of?
It's the bit where Devil says, "Destroy that DJ."
Oh, okay.
Both of them actually work, which is not. That usual for a four-part Colin Baker story, is it? Well, not in season 22.
That's horrible. Look at the big bruise on her face
there. Yeah.
But we
didn't comment on the bit where Grigori says, I'm a doctor and I'll recognize. It's the awful thing that Richard talked about earlier. When they cut me open and things start plopping out, I'll recognize the function of every, you know, major organ and stuff. I think, really? No.
That's a revelation.
Run out.
You know, despite that and despite the death by syringe and all of that, I do think this is a strong season, stronger than some of the ones around it.
I've got a question. Yes, I love that glass Dalek. Is the problem for critics at the time was Sayward's writing was not strong enough comedically or dryly. In fact, he's not an even wart. So it isn't necessarily fun. And that's the F factor that I wanted to ask you, but you all today. Seems a good moment as any to ask you, is this fun?
I think that the performances and the direction are good enough to kind of paper over that. And Sayward's not good, but he's not super terrible.
There's some good moments.
Yeah. I'm just
talking about dialogue right now.
So. Yeah, his dialogue isn't good, but no, people are doing their best to save it. And there are some funny jokes here. I think Kara's stuff is really funny. You know, like
they stand out. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that it stopped being a family show. And it's the thing that, you know, your mum and dad aren't going to sit and watch with you because they'll think it's too gross and off-putting. Mm. And, you know, Doctor Who was always a bit like that, I guess, but this is just it turned up to 11.
Well, I think this would have been quite fun if it had been an isolated instance. If he'd had, like, a black humour gruesome story in a season that wasn't
all black humour. Yeah.
Whereas it just feels like it's crystallising everything rather than being a fun aberration.
Look, I mean, I don't dislike things being black, and I really like black humour and stuff. I just don't think this is very good black humour is the problem.
And also the inverse of what you were saying, where the director's bringing a lot to it, is The Two Doctors, where you have actually a pretty decent script, but the director's not bringing anything to it. It's just left to stand or fall by itself.
Yeah. This shot here of Davros flying, I always got confused by as a kid. I couldn't quite work out what was happening.
It's going a little bit beyond what the show can actually achieve at this point. So there's all these elements kind of matted onto each other. It just looks like a giant mess.
Do you know, I've seen a version of this story where Davros is not hovering in the air there. He's hovering at the top of the stairs. And that's the shot. He's not hovering. He's at the top of the stairs and speaking down to Orsini. So I wonder if they just thought that didn't work. They've taken Davros from that and plopped him over the top there. Okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he was talking from the top of the stairs in the previous shots. So
yeah, it doesn't quite work. And I can't work out what's happening here. Is that a giant Dalek now? What's happening?
No, it's just the composite shot.
Pixelated to death.
And it was supposed to be hovering above them and shooting down on them, but because of the limitations of the production, they just couldn't make it work.
It just goes to show how completely dispensable those characters were. All they do is chew up runtime. I mean, I guess what they make the discovery of what's happening with the people who are in tranquil repose. I don't know.
Well, as with so many Sayward characters, they're decent enough by themselves. But once they've finished playing whatever role they have in the story,
disposable.
Yeah, just dispose of them instantly. They never get a good ending.
Yeah.
It's nice that she's sort of been brought into the main action here.
I love her delivery. Her great big bomb. It's so wonderful.
You fool, it's a bomb. It's a great big bomb. Now we both die, you before me.
It's so good. She is just tremendous.
Is this her audition piece for Patsy's mother?
Pretty much.
You get the impression that Eleanor Bron was always slightly too good for anything she was ever in.
Yeah.
You remember her first gigs were on David Frost with That Is the Week That Was.
Oh,
and she,
okay.
She was, well, because she'd been hanging around with Cleese and Chapman and the other lads, and she was there as one of the writers and one of the performers right from the early days.
Right. I remember her being in Bedazzled.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Here we go. It's a bomb.
It's a bomb.
It's a great big bomb.
And she just she turns to him.
No. She's so good. Look at this.
And you see, even that terrible Saywardian dialogue she manages
you
to sell.
Me. that's a revelation, all of it.
The way he sort of stabs her under the breast.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where Leela was taught to strike, underneath the breastbone.
It's just, so you know where Saywood got the name of her character from? A local potato in Rhodes when he was...
What, the Cara potato?
Yeah, the Cara potato.
I thought he'd watched episode 5 of The Keys of Marinus and said, I must name a character Cara.
And the name Tasmbika is named for the saint of barren women.
Oh, it does sound like a Greek cool name, actually. Yeah.
This is amazing, Daleks being blown up by rock and roll. Can you imagine if they'd gone the whole hog and had sort of Ticket to Ride or something being played in the background, taking it all the way back to the beginning?
They could never have afforded it.
Is that the same special
Ian gyrating in the background?
Inspired on thing? And
it is. Not a great death by him.
I would have liked Grandmaster Flash. Just for the homily. You murdered him.
Yeah. Oh,
Colin, it's nice to see that Colin is not the progenitor of violence in this one.
Mm. But, I mean, that's the Saywood thing too. He just, like, earlier on in this commentary, I said the Doctor comes in and breaks it all. But, in fact, does he make any difference to the actual outcome? Has he done?
Just kind of wandered around in the world, hasn't he?
Yeah. The Daleks are doing it. It's the Daleks turn up and...
Oh, these guys.
Yeah,
But then that was a criticism of the early RTD years as well, that the Doctor didn't instigate action.
But remember that he inspires people to instigate action, and I think that's a strong choice.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that why this almost feels like a late Billy story to me? Almost. Not in the incidental action, but Billy in the setup Hartnell and the... Billy Billy there's Hartnell. Only one. No, obviously not. But then if you look at the motivations of the characters and the behaviour between them,
Hartnell was always just keeping back and letting them shoot it out.
Yeah, he doesn't. I mean, Hartnell doesn't become the Doctor really. That the in the sense that he's the sort of major male lead hero of the show. You know, so he does wander through the world and just try and get out of it alive.
He's your carping granny on the settee, isn't he, sitting in the corner because she still owns the house.
It's a shame the Doctor doesn't get to talk to Kara.
Do you know what I like? I like the way that Davros is shot completely differently. Like he looks, you know, never for a second did you think that Davros in the Perspex tube wasn't Davros. Mm. That was clearly Davros. But then when you actually see him and he's shot from below and the performance is slightly different, you kind of think, actually, no, how can I have possibly thought that was Davros? Mm. This is really Davros. Mm. Are we going to shoot his fingers off now? Not yet.
Everything's blocked so well. You can follow the action brilliantly.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, look.
I'm just excited to be back down in Iron Grand Cellar with exactly the same props from UFO Moonbase.
Yes,
make the serving wench playing Davros in the tank.
And lusty enough they are on that. They really are the props from – they are Boss's old bits and pit bobs there.
It's a weeping angel this, in the background.
Yeah, the Greek statue. What's that doing in the background?
Art.
But don't you think these sets look amazing?
Yeah.
They look like they've had a ton of money thrown at them.
Yeah. Do they – who's – you get a different designer for each story, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. This is Roger – can't remember.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Roger somebody.
Oh, delicious people. I think the mask is good as well. I do think, you know, just technically it's better than Michael Wish's mask.
Mm. We're only getting this writing because Britain starved, almost starved during the war and didn't lose rationing until, what, 54?
Yeah, completely. It was well into the 50s.
Yeah, I think it was 54. We were only about 4 or 5 years before that, but we never went through the deprivations that they did.
Yeah.
So, and the real consciousness that we are paying the victors to not start another war, and that's why we don't have an aerospace industry, and that's why my pick of the week, by the way, are we doing pick of the week?
Why not?
It's something that James has lent me, which is Summer of Rockets with Toby Stevens, whom we own
as yes.
his young Maggie Smith's son, and Keely Hawes. And it's about the late 50s and British rocket telemetry and how they were leading the world. But it's done as a soap. It's really lovely. It's elegant and gorgeous. But no, the sense of Britain had lived through what in effect was the effects of a civil war again without actually fighting it on their own soil. But the V2, the fact they saw von Braun taking the Americans to space, the same man who launched the V2s on them, that anger is still here.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised that it took so long for Doctor Who to be this, when this is the British consciousness of the working people who are, you know, lived through this stuff. This should look very familiar.
Yeah.
I love this. Like the Doctor, you know, said to Perry, "I'm sorry about the DJ." And
yeah, that's actually quite a nice little moment.
It's a
little
moment. Sorry, too much.
But that's all right. Is Davros Thatcher? I'm just putting it out there.
And now
Thatchos. Yeah. Again, I think this is unnecessarily gross as well. Like that.
Oh, no, that's great.
That's a revelation. Action from the Doctor. Oh, no.
Those guards were actually on point. They're on the Doctor, right?
Yeah.
Oh, and finger on the
bits.
Floor.
Oh, chompy finger bits.
I'm glad that we've kept that too. So Julian Bleach has a robot hand.
He does, doesn't he? Yes. He is the Luke Skywalker of the new series.
Oh, look at these cheap and tatty models.
Yeah. Are they? I think they're beautiful. Oh, you're right.
Yeah. I do love that one that has the little sort of rod.
Why are they picking the fingers up and putting them in an esky?
No arm in trying.
And why does Davros have green blood?
Oh, interesting.
Why?
Because there's more copper in it, or he's a Spock fan.
Yes, he's just cosplaying Spock.
Do we know? Oh, no, Khaled's had red blood. We've seen it, yeah.
Oh, lots of exterminations, but they can't really fire.
Well, I was just thinking that the suffusions of copper sulfates are put through for whatever reason.
by the magic of the internet, James just informed me the designer on this is Alan Spaulding.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Oh.
Well, he did that marvellous line in Tennis Accoutrements, of course.
Oh, dear.
That's why all of Davros's tennis balls are sprayed chrome.
You're lucky with the new Dalek colour scheme. They weren't sort of neon green.
I wonder what else Saywood or JNT had wanted to do with the Daleks, because you know he would have wanted a rainbow Dalek. He would have been out there. Give me – this is probably just the production team going, I think we'll just go this far, John. I think this will be fine.
You know, that rings a bell. I think they were planning on having multicolored Daleks for remembrance.
Like in the movies.
Like in the fabulous victory of the Daleks.
Yeah. Oh God.
For some reason
I love those. they look like all of the ice lolly ads from the 60s again. It's a lovely TV21 thing.
It's just they've got favorite? Such big asses.
Orange
though.
One.
It was the colour of baked bean sauce.
Yum yum.
I love this. Davros is trying all that he can.
And
this is a very long denouement, isn't it?
Yeah.
I shall really be extended. Waiting for you and yes.
I love that. Wow. I love that Davros goes to
show. Oh, that's right. Fingers.
I'm not getting the logic of why the Doctor is still alive.
He's the star of the show.
But hang on, but why has Davros not found...
But also, do these Daleks realise it's the Doctor?
No, they don't recognise him.
They just said he
doesn't look like the Doctor. Okay. Yeah.
Although Patrick Troughton looked like the Doctor.
Yes, they recognised. Oh, they had a sneaking suspicion, didn't they?
It's an electric moment where they realise who he is, I think.
I guess if you want to be geeky about it, it depends on the Dalek timeline, doesn't it? This clearly comes after Resurrection, whereas who knows where that comes.
Okay. All right. I'll go with that, even though I never liked those explanations ever.
Since Daleks have... time travel, which at some point is rudimentary and nasty and at other points is really precise. I guess it just depends,
how they fiddle with their own timeline.
Were they just nipped out of the DARDIS?
The DARDIS? Yeah, that's what their time machine in the chase is called.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's a revelation.
Yeah, Daleks and relative dimension in space. No, really.
Doesn't Susan say that she made up...
She made that up.
No,
but she was a fifth columnist all the time, wasn't she?
She made up the name.
Yeah.
She from made the up initials. Time and relative dimension space from the initials. So it was called a TARDIS, and then she worked out what it was.
Oh, okay. I thought it was the other way around. If you mean capsule, why not say capsule?
No, but in the dialogue.
Yeah.
It's confusing dialogue, but it
she
actually...
says, I made up the name it is confusing dialogue.
You could actually...
It's you can interpret it both
just ways, possible that they were making it up as they went along.
No.
Yeah.
It's very convenient. Well, that's the revelation.
So it's been seeded, thank you, in episode one, deliberately.
I would like to explode it.
Todd, can you come out with that at some point and say, I have a bomb and I would like to explode it?
A great
I just don't
bomb.
Understand why they're all still alive. Is that the ennui that the rest of the audience would be feeling in 1985?
What do you mean? Like, why are they still making this?
Well,
that's what we're told to think now, and that's what we were being told was the response we should be having then. We saw the cancellation, but I just think it was too rapid a change, is what you were saying, Peter, too rapid a change too soon. But I don't know that it's actually ineffectual, and I really like the political commentary of it now.
Yeah, it's angry. It's super, super angry. And it's very mid-80s.
It feels the absolute rightest piece of casting all season is putting Alexei Sale right in the middle of this, who's one of the angriest and most literate comics of his time and would just talk about all the things that are going wrong and all the rights and services that have been pulled away from the British people, and that you're reading about it because Murdoch owns the Sun and the Star and you're just everybody look at it now.
Same
difference.
They elect whole governments. They control the world.
This is very confident, this story. It doesn't feel like a series that's faltering.
No.
I think that rapid change is a focal point that the BBC can use as an excuse.
It's a focal point for the assassin's bullet.
but you know, oh, it's become too dark and violent. Let's rest it and rethink it. That's just an excuse. They've been wanting to cancel it for years.
If they thought it was too dark and violent, where was the head of drama reading all the scripts saying this is too dark and violent?
Yeah. Mm, exactly. Mm. It's just an excuse.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that they wanted to save money for breakfast TV or something.
And EastEnders.
EastEnders.
Yeah, yeah. They needed the budget for a new twice-weekly soap series. But and this was making money, wasn't it?
It was an extremely short-sighted decision.
It was simply that a few of them – it wasn't Yentob, was it? We know it was Grade.
No, it was Grade. There's talk that the first mess Grade had to clear up when he became controller was the report on his desk that said Warriors of the Deep was unfit for transmission, and that sort of focused his attention.
Was it?
We don't
know. Who knows?
Have you seen it?
I love it.
I actually quite like it as well, but there are those scenes where it's clearly a rehearsal, you know, like Janet Fielding thinks she's doing an in-camera run-through, which ends up getting put to air.
Which is true.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, green paint all over the set because the murker hasn't had the chance to dry. Oh, and,
it's right. It's
and
leaking.
The murker.
Isn't that
the name for a certain type of wig?
No, that's Merkin.
It's marvellous model work.
Yeah.
Everything about this story looks like it's had money thrown at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't...
If there was any justice, one of those two would have been killed.
Yeah, but I think that's part of the thing too. Don't you think that you know...
Yes, I do agree.
Yeah. That this is the best we can hope for is people who are terribly morally compromised kind of survive, I guess.
But kind of good at their jobs and so might get the police back on its feet.
Yeah. We don't really care though, to be honest. Mm.
Well, it is feeding the galaxy.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't
care. The galaxy, it's all word peril, isn't it?
Yeah,
the
Now, where do we think the Doctor is going to take her? I would plump for Basingstoke.
Basingstoke, yes. The planet Barcelona.
Bandrageous 1-5.
Yeah, it's a bit cramped on Bandrageous.
Why did they actually have to cut this?
Brisbane.
And that's a revelation you'll never actually know. Why did they do that?
Yes.
Because he actually had said Blackpool, yes. Which is the next story.
Yeah, but you don't have to have that being the next story, just to have it a nice...
That's right, but I think J&T made the decision that to freeze frame it on there. You don't know where they're going to be. They've got... You know, they don't know where they're going. And yeah. I actually think it's highly effective. It's one, I think it's great.
Well, if he was going to say Basildon, it's not that effective.
But we don't know.
I actually thought that was an impressive cliffhanger at the time when I first saw it.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah.
It was better than about half we'd had this season watching it in Australia.
That's it. You know, it's not quite the Florana speech, but.
Word Blackpool doesn't exist anymore.
Really?
What?
It ended up on the cutting room floor and. They've lost the footage.
Oh. Is that so? Oh.
What is the place?
That's it.
Oh, I thought it having a revival. What are you saying? So it was Pat Godfrey for this one as well, and of course Pat had designed outfits.
Alan Spaulding.
Yes.
What a marvellous story that was.
Yeah,
I agree.
Really enjoyed it.
Well done, the 45% of you who voted for it. It was a good choice.
Yes.
Oh. I chose Terror of the Vervoids, which I think is a fine choice as well.
And shorter.
I should have nominated Time Lash.
Peter likes Time Lash too.
Oh, so do I, but
Time Lash is genuinely good in places.
Yeah.
In places.
Yes.
And genuinely serious.
That might be a revelation to many people.
Oh, dear. All right, well.
Did I miss something then?
No revelations here.
Well, dear listener, that's all we have time for this week. We'll be back soon with a very special Christmas episode and then back in September, probably, with our coverage of Series 3. In the meantime, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts and you can keep up with us at flightthroughentirety.com, Flight Through Entirety on Facebook and at FTE Podcast on Twitter. You can also find our Series 11 flashcast, Jodie Into Terror, jodieintoterror.com and at Jodie Into Terror on Twitter, and our James Bond commentary podcast, Bondfinger at bondfinger.com, at Bondfinger on Facebook, and at Bondfingercast on Twitter. Until next time, after a lifetime of punching people and forcibly... Let me try that again. Until next time, after a life of punching people and forcibly pouring Voxnic down their throats, may you retire with no consequences and enjoy the life of a simple farmer. Thank you very much for listening and good night.
Good night.
See you soon.
Good night. Good mincing.